This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's John Dalby Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see johncast.net.
Joining me now is Dr. Jane Birkby from the University of Leiden, and she's released a press release about detecting water on extrasolar planets. So can you tell us a little bit about how you go about detecting water in extrasolar planets?
Okay, so the method that we use to do this is actually a variation of a technique that is probably fairly well known to your listeners. This is the radial velocity technique for detecting planets, or the Doppler wobble technique, which is where you look at the star, and the star is doing this tiny little slow orbit, like a little dance, in a reaction to the gravitational influence of the planet. So it's a small effect. What we've done is flip that technique on its head, and we're looking at the gravitational influence of the star on the planet, which is huge. So rather than doing like a tiny little wobble, the planet is going around its orbit at hundreds of thousands of miles per hour. And what we do is we look for the unique fingerprint of water in the spectrum of the planet's atmosphere, and we see what happens is that those, all the individual lines that make up the unique fingerprint of water over, say, the 5 hours that we looked at the system for, actually shift in wavelength. So they blue shift or red shift depending on what part of the orbit that you're looking at, and from that we match up those lines with a model that we have of water. And from that we get the detection, like this unique fingerprint we can exactly match up, and that's how we can say that there's definitely water in this atmosphere.
Okay, brilliant. So what type of extrasolar planets do you actually look at? Because I know there's big ones that are close in, there's small ones that are close in, and or ones that are further out. So which type do you actually look at?
So so far this technique we've only used on the hot Jupiter type planets. So these planets, so they're like Jupiter, but they're really close to the host star. So this particular one goes around its star in just over 2 days. So it's well within the orbit of Mercury. And it's the planet itself is heated to, say, over 1,000 degrees Celsius. So it's a really extreme world. So although we've found water, I guess the question that would lead into is it habitable, this particular planet? And certainly not for this one. It's a much more extreme system. However, the technique that we've used... In the future, if you were to use a much larger telescope, which you would need, because if you want to look at smaller planets, they're even fainter than the hot Jupiters we've been looking at. But if you have something like the European Extremely Large Telescope, which will be a 39-meter telescope, when that comes online, we will be able to use this technique to actually study the atmospheres of much smaller, possibly Earth analog type systems, and actually start looking at their atmospheres not just for very simple molecules that have been found before, like carbon monoxide, which is where this technique was first developed. But now we've found water, and we hope to be able in the future to look for oxygen, methane, carbon dioxide, any kind of biosignature that might tell us something a bit more about the habitability of that planet.
So by looking in this method, you can actually see kind of the composition of the atmosphere almost and see whether it is, you know, potentially habitable in some way.
Yes, we're really trying to sort of break down the individual chemical makeup of the planetary atmosphere, really say, you know, what gases are in that atmosphere, and from there try to infer other things about the planet itself. One of the things that we can also study is how the temperature of the atmosphere changes as you go from sort of the surface up to very high altitudes. And we can look for things like an inversion layer, which is on the Earth is like our stratosphere. So you get a temperature change as you go further up the atmosphere, and then it flips back. And that's why we get sort of cloud layers and things as well. So we can look for those kind of structures in other planets as well. So it's not just chemical composition, but structure. Like, what does the atmosphere really, what is it really doing?
How can you look at like the structure of the atmosphere? Is it just a slightly different signature in the spectrum?
Yeah, so the different temperatures and the different pressures, so depending on how high up in the atmosphere you are, changes the pressure. The signature that you detect, the lines are slightly different. The models change ever so slightly. So the template that you're trying to match to the lines in your planet spectrum changes a little bit in reaction to temperature and pressure. And so from that, we can start to sort of constrain what models really do fit for that atmosphere.
Okay, brilliant. So was there a selection procedure for the planets that you looked at? I mean, how many planets have you looked at?
That's a good question. So for this technique, we're really only looking at planets that are already known. And we've done this for, let me think. So there's Tau Botus, 51 Pegasi. This one is HD189733 and also HD209458. And those last two are sort of the poster childs of they're actually transiting planets. But the technique actually works for non-transiting planets as well, which is important because not all planets transit. Yeah, so for the moment we've tried for this four planets, and obviously we're looking at more, and those are all the hot Jupiter planets, and that's what we can really do with current instrumentation. And the key thing is that this is done from the ground, so we don't need to go into space and use expensive space telescopes. This is all from the ground, even though the Earth's atmosphere can really obstruct you. We find that even in some of like the most opaque windows of the Earth's atmosphere, we can still use this technique.
So in the future, you said you hope that it could be applied to kind of smaller planets. Do you have sort of a direct plan for the future, sort of immediate future?
The immediate future. So I think if we really want to look at sort of Earth-like planets, we'll need much bigger telescopes. We did a few calculations in another paper that was released by our project leader from this particular group of observations, from Inga Snellen. And he looked at if you had an Earth twin in a habitable zone of a M dwarf star. So these are stars that are about a third of the size of the Sun, and they're much cooler. But it means that the brightness ratio between the planet and the star is more favourable. And he calculated that if you wanted to look for oxygen, if you used an ELT, the habitable zone is about 11 days, and you need to see enough, this was for a transiting system, you need to see enough transits to build up your signal. So we call this signal to noise, like how sure are we that we see something is really there. And to do that, he worked out it would take 5 to 10 years, which might seem like a long time, but at the end of that, you would know for sure if there was oxygen in the atmosphere of that Earth twin, for sure. So it's quite kind of, I don't know, I think although it's a long time scale, I think once you find those systems, when they're detected, you know, 5 to 10 years later, you really do know. You can sort of point up in the sky and say, that one, that planet right there has got oxygen.
That's absolutely amazing that you can do that. And like you said, it's kind of a long time, but there are long period surveys of planets, of suns and stuff that do look at them for that amount of time. Yeah.
So it wouldn't be a continuous observation. You wouldn't have to point your telescope for that amount of time. You would just need to catch every single transit. So every 11 days, you'd need to look for, you know, a couple of hours, or I think it would be a little bit longer than a couple of hours. But, you know, spend a night looking at it and then wait for the next one. And if you did that for 5 to 10 years, yeah, you would start to see the signals of oxygen if it was there.
Okay, thank you very much for telling us all about your research, and the best of luck with the future of it.
Great, thanks. It was great to talk to you.